Hello and welcome to Speak the Words, a Cosmere podcast. I'm Sean.
And I'm Mango. And I'm still sick.
This is a podcast where we are slowly but surely working our way through the story of Stormlight Archive and the Cosmere overall. Working on Oathbringer right now, the third book in the Stormlight Archive. And today we are going to attempt to finish part two. We'll see if we get it done. Quickly before we jump into this, Mango, do you remember what happened last time?
No.
Okay, so we had the Scar chapter, where Scar and Lynn both sucked in Stormlight.
Oh, yeah.
Lynn is that one girl that Kaladin asked if she wanted to be a scribe, right?
Yes, yes.
And she was like, what? Just a scribe? That's it? And then he was like, but you're a woman! And it's like, literally, yeah. You know Shallan. What the hell?
And Sigzel, in his inner monologue, is like, sometimes I want to hit my captain. Just, like, a little bit.
Which is interesting, because Sigzel comes from somewhere where homosexuality's not normal. But he's still very much, like, okay with her being a warrior or whatever, I guess.
Yeah.
Or maybe he just thinks Kaladin's dumb.
I think also Kaladin just wasn't being very, like... Like, I think Sigzel found what was happening to be obvious and Kaladin couldn't catch on.
Yeah, Kaladin's kind of dumb sometimes.
He's kind of dumb. We also had a Jasnah chapter where just her and her friend Ivory were talking, and they implied that Hoyd Witt told them something about the Recreants at the end of Words of Radiance that Jasnah feels they should share with everybody else, but Ivory says that if they share it, the Recreants will happen again. So
Jasnah knows the secret.
Jasnah knows the secret. There seems to be
Which means Hoyd knows this. Well, of course Hoyd knows the secret.
Yeah. There's earlier we had obviously a scene where the Stormfather said there was something that Dalinar still didn't know and that he refuses to tell him. So it seems that Jasnah's in on that, whatever it is.
And they decided that it's best not to tell everyone for the sake of everything, I guess.
Yeah. We had a Moesh chapter where he defended some Parshmen that had been enslaved with the rest of the humans.
Yeah.
Did you pick up on why they were enslaved? The person said that it was because they brought a false god among their ranks. If not, it'll become very clear tonight.
Was it a radiant?
And then the last chapter we covered was a Dalinar flashback when Adolin was born.
Oh, yeah.
And Gavilar said that he's sending Dalinar back out to war because he thinks he's going to need Dalinar to go fight at the Rift, but for now he just wants to show the world that the Alethi are still strong. And that is where we left off. This week, or this time, we start with chapter 50, Shosh 37. It has Dalinar's symbol, and the epigraph reads, "We also instruct that you should not return to Obra Dei. We have claimed that world, and a new avatar of our being is beginning to manifest there. She is young yet, and as a precaution, she has been instilled with an intense and overpowering dislike of you." Dalinar is flying with Kaladin, Elokar, Kadash, Navani, a young Ardent, and 10 of Kaladin's squires over the Shattered Plains. Kaladin slowed them all down as they reached the war camps, and Navani remarks on how quick the trip had been. Elokar is impressed, but Kaladin wants to test flying in front of a storm before they go to Kolinar. Kaladin takes them all down to the ground, and they enter the Kolin war camp. Dalinar talks with a bright lady there about keeping the war camps defended, as they'd need the place for farming operations and lumber. Navani wanted to found a new kingdom on the Shattered Plains, but had gotten pushback from all the others. Later, Navani and Rushu are talking about her sketches for the ship that we saw previously, if you remember that, like the art I posted for you. That was like a boat with weird sails.
Oh, yeah.
They're talking about that art. Dalinar was happy to see Navani getting involved with the other scholars. She had always claimed that she wasn't one, but anyone could see the truth. Queen Fen of Thelenna writes back via Spanreed to agree to visit Yirithiru. Dalinar leaves his bunker and goes to the monastery where he wanders around until he finds Kadash. He tells the Ardent that he's looking for the madman who claimed to be one of the heralds. Dalinar says that all the other patients from the monastery were safe at Yirithiru, but the madman had disappeared and Dalinar is looking for clues. Kadash points him to the room Tolan had been kept in and asks if he believes the madman's claims, and Dalinar says that he does. Dalinar asks if Kadash would accept the truth of the Almighty being dead if Tolan confirmed it, and Kadash says that if the Almighty was dead, then the entire basis for the Kalin's rule would be null. The horrors they committed during war would no longer be proof of the Almighty's favor. He says it would be easier to not know. Kadash says that the leaders of Voronism in Yaakoved, Herdaz, Karbrant, Thelena, and Nu-Natanan had a meeting that day about Dalinar, and all had written to Kadash to question him about Dalinar. He says that another span read is copying down ongoing translations of the Dawn Chant. He says that the translations may prove that Dalinar isn't mad, but that he is still Kadash is still worried that something else may be influencing Dalinar. Dalinar had earlier asked Kadash for proof that they were following the Almighty's precepts, and Kadash says that they will have it and will show it to him, and he seems to believe that the Dawn Chant will have that proof once they finish translating it all. Dalinar says that he looks forward to it, but that the truth is really easy. Dalinar leaves and finds the room that Tolan had been placed in. He was unnerved by the tiny dark confines in which they stored madmen, but trusted that Ardents knew best in this area. The door was bolted shut, and he reflexively tried summoning his shard blade. The Stormfather is like, "Hey, what are you doing? Told you not to do that," and Dalinar apologizes to him. And then I'm going to read from the book. "My powers," Dalinar said. "Can I use them?" "Binding things," the Stormfather said. "How would that open a door? You are a bondsmith. You bring things together. You do not divide them. And my other surge? That radiant in the vision made stone warp and ripple. You are not ready. Besides, that surge is different for you than it is for a stone ward." Dalinar exited the building and rounded it, finding the hole that Amaram cut at the end of the last book to retrieve Tolan. He can't find any clues in the room, and on his way out notices the blow dart that Iadol had tried to attack Amaram with. He shooed away a Kremling and picked it up.
A Kremling?
He found Kaladin in the monastery courtyard and showed him the blow dart. Kaladin says that it's poison derived from Blackbane. They look around a bit more, using Kaladin's shard blade to cut into a safe and then depart for Yirithiru. Dalinar asks Kaladin to take somebody and practice flying in front of a storm by going to Thalen City to unlock the Oath Gate, and Kaladin agrees to go during the next high storm. And that is the end of Chapter 50. Chapter 51 is titled Full Circle. It has Moash's symbol, and the epigraph reads, "That is all we will say at this time. If you wish more, seek these waters in person and overcome the tests we have created. Only in this will you earn our respect." The parchment of Moash's new crew don't like him much, but it doesn't really bother him because he doesn't like himself either. They're taking a break, and he watches as a group of fused ride by on horses. He wonders what their power is as they can't fly. One of the parchmen introduces himself to Moash as Saw, and the two talk about the desolation. Do you remember the name Saw?
No.
Saw was one of the parchmen that Kaladin was hanging out with earlier in the book. So these parchmen are the group that Kaladin was with, and they're being punished for having traveled with Kaladin.
Okay. Oh, so by false gods, they were like, yeah, no radiance.
No radiance, fake. Yeah. Yeah, they're fake fused. You know, similar powers, but not our gods. Moash said that this was supposed to be an apocalypse, but is now realizing that it's an occupation. Saw tells Moash not to speak so casually about the fused, and Moash offhandedly remarks that he's already killed one. This shocks Saw, who just stares at Moash. They travel a little further until they arrive at a small town near Kolinar that was already under Voidbringer control. They freed some of the slaves that were too weak to keep pulling, and sent them towards Kolinar in an attempt to burden the city with refugees that can't work or fight. Moash and his crew are led to a lumberyard. They're tasked with spending the next few weeks building siege equipment, and then when the assault happens, they're to run a ladder toward Kolinar's walls. And Moash just starts to laugh. It cuts away from Moash to Shallan's point of view. It's not a new chapter, it just changes POVs. Moraes has just sent Shallan a letter telling her that Ishna is allowed to stay close, but if Shallan wishes to kill her, the Ghostbloods will help cover it up. And if you remember, Ishna is the woman that is helping train Shallan's soldiers to be a spy. Shallan sat outside King Elokar's chambers, frustrated at the tone of the letter. They allowed Ishna to be close, as if they owned her. She had been practicing with her light weaving and had been able to create an illusion, then attach it to an outside source of stormlight that would keep it going without using her own. So, like, she could create a light weaving, stick it to a gemstone, and then it would use that gemstone stormlight instead of hers.
Interesting.
She's let into Elokar's chambers, and he's surprised to see her. He says she didn't need to wait and could have seen him immediately, but Shallan hadn't wanted to be a bother. Elokar is studying a map of Kolinar, excited to get underway, but understanding of Kaladin's desire to practice his flight first. Shallan tells him that she's going to join Kaladin on the flight to Thalen City to open the Oath Gate, and asks him to send the guards away so that she can request something of him. The guards are reluctant to leave, but Elokar is like, guys, she's a Night Radiant. It's fine.
Okay.
After they leave, Shallan reveals her light-weaving abilities to Elokar, and tells him about her team of spies and offers to join the mission to Kolinar. Elokar is unsure if Dalinar would be okay with two of his Radiants going, and Shallan is like, hey, are you the king, or is Dalinar the king? And she's like, either way, it doesn't matter, because I'm from Yakaved, so I don't answer to either of you. She points out that she could easily get them to the Oathgate without a fight if it's already held by the enemy, and Elokar seems intrigued by that. A short time later, Shallan left the room carrying a formal royal request to Dalinar for Shallan's aid on the mission. Kaladin had said he could bring 6 people, not counting the bridgemen who would fly on their own. Adolin and Elokar left room for 4 more. Shallan needed to get away from Yirithiru, away from Yasna, until she figured out what she wants. Part of her knew that she was running from her problems, but she was also going to help Adolin reclaim his home. And that is the end of chapter 51.
How's Kaladin gonna bring 6 people by himself?
You know, infuse them. And because they'll be flying in front of the storm, he'll be constantly being refilled on stormlight the whole way.
Oh, that's true, but, like, still.
Yeah. And I assume that the Windrunners that fly on their own will be able to help him. Because they'll have powers as long as they're near him.
Oh, the squires.
Yeah.
I don't count them as Windrunners. They're like...
Yeah, they're not Windrunners. You're right.
So I was like, what other Windrunners?
Yeah. The squires will be able to help him, I think. Chapter 52 is titled After His Father, and it has Dalinar's flashback symbol, and it is for 18 and a half years ago. Dalinar returns to his camp from a battle where he'd been fighting Vaedans at the border. He had already crushed the Herdazians and sent them back to their lands, but it had taken 4 years. 4 glorious years. He has his shard plate removed and is too tired to leave the armorer's tent, so makes them all leave instead and has it set up to be his audience tent for now. Kadash appears with the final battle report and says that they completely routed the Vaedans. They'd killed around 2,000 and lost barely 200. Dalinar dismisses Kadash, and the man lingers for a second, telling Dalinar how incredible he had been on the battlefield. Dalinar tries to sleep, but is unable to. The difficulties of running the army were as bad as his time back in Kolinar, but now at least he was rewarded for his work with the thrill. He starts to fall asleep until he hears Evie's voice. He exits the tent and finds her, or his wife, standing there. He demands to know why she's there, scaring her. Evie says that other women go to war with their husband, and Dalinar snaps that Evie wasn't trained for that life. He looks at the guards and tells her to come inside the tent. She tells him that she brought their children, and he gets even angrier that she had brought them to the front lines.
Yeah, I would be too.
Navani said I should come, Evie said. She said it was shameful that you have waited so long between visits. Adolin has gone over a year without seeing you, Dalinar, and little Renarin has never even met his father. Renarin, Dalinar said, trying to work out the name. He hadn't picked that. Rekar, no. Re, Evie said, from my language. Nar, after his father. In, to be born unto. That was a butchering of the language. Dalinar fumbled, trying to work through it. Nar meant like unto. What does Re mean in your language? Dalinar asked. It has no meaning. It is simply the name. It means our son's name, or him. Dalinar groaned softly. So the child's name was like one who was born unto himself. Delightful. You didn't answer, Evie pointed out, when I asked after a name via Spanreed. How would Navani and Eli allow this travesty of a name? Knowing those two, they'd probably encouraged it. They were always trying to get Evie to be more forceful. Evie says that she wishes to be more like an Alethi wife, and Dalinar tells her that she should not have brought the kids, that they were the heirs to the Kolin princedom and needed to remain safe in Kolinar. They talk about the earlier battle, And Dalinar tells her that she will hate hearing about all the deaths if she stays. She asks him why he can't just let the men surrender instead of killing them all, and he just tells her that it wouldn't work. They walk over to a set of wagons, where Adolin is sitting on a chul, waving a wooden sword around. When he notices Dalinar, he gets down, walks over, and salutes. Evie beamed. He asked the best way to talk to you. I told him you were a general, the leader of all the soldiers. He came up with that on his own. Dalinar squatted down. Little Adolin immediately shied away. Afraid of me? Not unwise. I'm a dangerous man. Daddy? The boy said. Yes. Don't you remember me? I remember you. We talk about you every night when we burn prayers, so you will be safe, fighting bad men. I prefer to be safe from the good ones, too, though I will take what I am offered. He stood up, feeling, what, shame to not have seen the boy as often as he should have? Pride at how the boy was growing? The thrill still squirming deep down. How had it not dissipated since the battle? Where is your brother, Adolin? Dalinar asked. A nurse carried over a child who could nearly walk and set him down in the grass.
Oh!
The child made no sounds. He just stared, solemn, as he tried to grip blade after blade of grass. Dalinar waited for the excitement he'd felt before, upon meeting Adolin for the first time. But he was just so tired. Can I see your sword? Adolin asked. Dalinar wanted nothing more than to sleep, but he summoned the blade anyway. The boy's eyes grew wide. Mommy says I can't have my plate yet, Adolin said. Taleb needs it. You can have it when you come of age. Good. I'll need it to win a blade. Nearby, Evie clicked her tongue softly, shaking her head. Dalinar smiled. I'll win you one in war, son. No, I want to win my own, like you did. A worthy goal. But a soldier needs to be willing to accept help. You mustn't be hard-headed. Pride doesn't win battles. Dalinar smiled, then stood up and dismissed Oathbringer. The last embers of the thrill finally faded. Evie led him to a bed within one of her wagons. Then, at last, Dalinar was able to sleep. And that is the end of the chapter. I think that Dalinar is really trying to make up with when it comes to Renarin. Just from, like, the way... They talk about in, like, the first book how he doesn't like it when anybody makes fun of Renarin. And I think part of that is, like, you see here, when he first met Renarin, he didn't feel anything. Like... He was so caught up in the thrill and in this battle that he didn't feel like any emotions at the sight of his son. And I think that's something that Dalinar is trying to make up with his overprotectiveness of Renarin.
I feel like that might not even be entirely his fault, though. That might just be the influence of the thrill.
Yeah. But Dalinar doesn't
like how overpowering it is. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I have an image for you. We're really not going to spend a lot of time on this image because, oh my god, is it so much. Sanderson said, hey, y'all want to know what glyphs are about? And so you can see this image is an in-depth breakdown of the Alethi glyph system.
I'm not reading that.
It's a lot. We're not going to talk about it. But it talks about how, like, there's individual glyphs and then glyph pairs combine three glyphs. And it goes over, like, the different sounds that... and stuff. It's cool to look at, but it's not, there's so much. Another letter from, or this is also by Nas, the same guy that's been doing all of these, like, informations. Chapter 53 is titled Such a Twisted Cut, and it has Yasna's symbol. Okay. The epigraph reads, friend, your letter is most intriguing, even revelatory. Okay. I can't tell you anything about this epigraph. This epigraph is the reason that I had wanted to do Mistborn before Oathbringer, but we didn't get to do that. This is the only Mistborn reference in Oathbringer, but if I were to tell you who is writing this letter, it would be a massive spoiler. Like the biggest spoiler of Mistborn. So I'm going to continue to read these epigraphs, but I can't tell you anything about them. I'm sorry.
Okay, that epigraph literally said nothing.
No, but there's going to be a couple more that they're going to be talking, and it's just, I like to give you a little more information where I can, like, tell you the names and everything, but I can't for this one. Yeah. Yasna is studying monarchs that had been slain by their own family members in order to claim a throne. She's in the basement of Yirithiru, Recently, a group of scouts had been sent down the tunnels that the Midnight Mother had escaped through, and discovered that it led to an exit at the foothill of the mountain. So they do have a way out of Urethiru in case, for some reason, the Oath Gate stopped working. The basement had been turned into a scholarly institute by Navani. Renarin stands at the edge, watching the scholars, and Jasnah thinks that he needs to decide where he wants to belong. The stories she'd been studying poked at her again. The greatest threat to a family, a ruling family, was normally its own members. She'd tried so hard to protect her family from outside, and had no idea what she would do against threats within. She listens to some of the other scholars' conversations. Some are talking about how the temperatures were higher than they should be, and a pair of storm wardens seemed interested in recruiting Renarin. Jasnah sends Ivory to spy on those two. Her spanry turned on, connecting her to two of her colleagues. One of them said that they had been tracking who they believed to be Nail. They say that they were in the Aesir Palace when Nail had tried to kill Lyft, and they tell Jasnah about Lyft and that she's an edge dancer. Jasnah says that she will provide them with true sketches of the heralds provided by an unexpected source. They continue talking about the state of the world, and Jasnah looks over to Renarin, who seems to be muttering to himself, or perhaps to his spren. She casually reads his lips. "It's coming from in here," Renarin said, "somewhere in this room." Jasnah asks one of her contacts if they've constructed drawings of the Radiant Spren, and asks specifically about the Truth Watcher Spren. They describe it as looking like light on a surface after it reflects through something crystalline. She excuses herself from the conversation and walks over to Navani and Shallan. Jasnah turned to see Meridas Amaram standing in the doorway.
Ugh.
He strode toward her. "Jasnah, I was told I could find you here. Remind me to find whoever told you and have them hanged." Amaram stiffened. "Could we speak together more privately, just for a moment?" "I think not. We need to discuss your uncle. The rift between our houses serves nobody. I wish to bridge that chasm, and Dalinar listens to you. Please, Jasnah, you can steer him properly." "My uncle knows his own mind on these matters, and doesn't require me to steer him." "As if you haven't been doing so already, Jasnah. Everyone can see that he has started to share your religious beliefs." "Which would be incredible, since I don't have religious beliefs." Amaram sighed. "Please, private. Not a chance, Meridas. Go away. We were close once. My father wished us to be close. Do not mistake his fancies for fact. Jasnah, you really should leave before somebody gets hurt." He ignored her suggestion, stepping closer. "We thought you were dead. I needed to see for myself that you were well. You have seen. Now leave." Instead, he gripped her forearm. "Why, Jasnah? Why have you always denied me? Other than the fact that you are a detestable buffoon who achieves only the lowest level of mediocrity, as it is the best your limited mind can imagine, I can't possibly think of a reason." "Mediocre? You insult my mother, Jasnah. You know how hard she worked to raise me to be the best soldier this kingdom has ever known."
"Yes, from what I understand, she spent the 7 months she was with child entertaining each and every military man she could find, in the hopes that something of them would stick to you."
Meridas's eyes widened. To their side, Shallan audibly gasped. "You godless whore," Amaram hissed. "If you weren't a woman..." "If I weren't a woman, I suspect we wouldn't be having this conversation. Unless I were a pig, then you'd be doubly interested."
He thrust his hand to the side, preparing to summon his blade. Jasnah smiled, holding her free hand toward him, letting stormlight curl and rise from it.
"Oh, please do, Meridas. Give me an excuse. I dare you."
He stared at her hand. The entire room had gone silent. His eyes flicked up to meet hers, then he spun and stalked from the room. He will be trouble. A high-pitched sound came from beside her, and Jasnah glanced to find Shallan making an excited noise in the back of her throat and clapping her hands together quickly. Wonderful. Jasnah asks Navani to go away for a minute, and Shallan tells Jasnah about her joining the mission to Kolinar, framing it as if it had been Elokar's idea. Jasnah says that she will speak with Elokar, and that for now she needs Shallan to do drawings of Renarin and Kaladin's spren. She trails off as she looks over at Renarin again. Renarin stood near the far wall, which was covered in palm-sized tiles. He tapped a specific one, and somehow made it pop out like a drawer. Jasnah strode across the room, Shallan scampering along behind her. Renarin glanced at them, then held up what he found in the small drawer. A ruby, cut into a strange shape with holes drilled into it. She took it from him and held it up.
"What is it?" Navani said. "A fabrial? No metal parts? Why, what is that shape?"
Jasnah reluctantly surrendered it to her mother.
"So many imperfections in the cut," Navani said. "That will cause it to lose stormlight quickly. It won't even hold a charge for a day, I bet. And it will vibrate something fierce."
Jasnah touched it, infusing the gemstone with stormlight. It started glowing, but not nearly as brightly as it should have. Navani was, of course, right. It vibrated as Stormlight curled off it. Why would anyone spoil a gem that with such a twisted cut and hide it? The small drawer was latched with a spring, but she couldn't see how Renarin had gotten it undone. Storms, Shallan whispered. That's a pattern. A pattern? Buzzes in sequence, Shallan said. My spren says he thinks this is a code. Letters? Music of language, Renarin whispered. He drew in Stormlight, then turned and pressed his hands against the wall, sending a surge of Stormlight through it. Drawers slid open, one behind each white tile. 100, 200. Each revealing gemstones inside. The library had decayed, but the Ancient Radiance had obviously anticipated that. They'd found another way to pass on their knowledge. And that is the end of the chapter.
Whoa, that's cool.
It's very cool.
So they purposely cut gemstones that way, so that when light, when Stormlight goes into them, they vibrate in, like, the equivalent of Morse code.
Yes.
Oh, that's so cool.
And I will tell you, the next set of epigraphs in part 3 are all from this library. It's very cool. I very much enjoy it.
Is it also that one epigraph from before? That the one that was all like numbers?
No. It's not like that.
No, not that one?
No. That one was from the diagram.
Oh.
That was from...
Tarnian's. I couldn't remember. Shtick.
Yeah. Chapter 54 is titled An Ancient Singer's Name. The epigraph reads, I would have thought, before attaining my current station, that a deity could not be surprised. Obviously, this is not true. I can be surprised. I can perhaps even be naive, I think. Moash is working as Ken is ranting about whether their treatment at the hands of the Fused is any better than the humans. Saw tries to get her to be quiet, telling her that she'll get them in trouble. She tries to say that if it feels like they were set up, but can't find the word. Moash helps. They did that a lot, forgetting words. Or maybe they were simply trying the words out for the first time. Their accent was so similar to that of many of the Bridgemen who had been Moash's friends. Let go, Moash, something deep within him whispered. Give up your pain. It's all right. You did what was natural. You can't be blamed. Stop carrying that burden. Let go. They pass a Fused that seemingly can use void light to grow his carapace into tools, like a saw for an arm, which is fucking crazy. And this is when they start, I don't know when they started using the word void light, but they started using it here, apparently. It's Odium's version of Stormlight. So it's the investiture that comes from him. Stormlight comes from Honor. Voidlight comes from Odium.
So Odium's literally just copying Honor. It's like, hey, you did this thing, I'm making it, yeah. But opposite.
Yeah. Ken says they were set up because there weren't enough humans to run the first assault on Kolinar's walls. She accuses Saw of not caring, and he snaps at her, reminding her that they had taken his daughter from him. She asks him what they should do, and he just whispers that he doesn't
they
know.
They took his daughter from him? No!
Yes.
No! What did they do with her?
Who knows?
Sean.
Moash drops what he's doing and charges off to find one of the flying Fused. He finds one of the other Fused instead and asks to speak with someone in charge. The Fused regarded him and grinned. Someone in charge, Moash repeated. The Voidbringer laughed, then fell backward. Great, Moash thought. One of the crazy ones. There were many of those. Moash stalked away but didn't get much farther into the town before something dropped from the sky. Little human, the creature said, you are passionate and interesting. I need to talk to someone in charge. You need nothing but what we give you, but your desire is to be granted. Lady Leshwi will see you. Great. Where can I find her? The Fused pressed its hand against his chest and smiled. Both of them rose into the air. Panicking, Moash clutched at the Fused. They rose until the town looked like a tiny model, and then they ascended even further. Finally, the Fused slowed them to a hovering stop. Though Moash tried to hold on, the Fused shoved him to the side, then zoomed away. Moash drifted alone. His heart thundered, and he realized something. He did not want to die. He felt a surge of hope as he found he was drifting toward another Fused, a woman who hovered in the sky. Moash drifted right up beside her, getting so close that she was able to reach out and stop him. He resisted grabbing that arm and hanging on for dear life. Moash, the Fused said. Leshwi, the other, had called her. How do you know my name? Your overseer told me. Where did you get that name? My grandfather named me. Curious. Do you know that it is one of our names? It is? She nodded. How long has it drifted in on the tides of time, passing from the lips of singers to men and back, to end up here, on the head of a human slave? Look, you're one of the leaders. I'm one of the fused who is sane, she said, as if it were the same thing. Then I need to... You're bold. Many of the singers we left here are not. We find them remarkable, considering how long they were abused by your people. But still, they are not bold enough. Where did you learn the surges, human? The surges? When you killed me, you were lashed to the sky, but you responded quickly with familiarity. I will say, without guile, that I was furious to be caught so unaware. Wait, when I killed you? She regarded him, unblinking. You're the same one? This is a new body, offered to me in sacrifice, to bond and make my own, as I have none. You're some kind of Spren? She blinked, but did not reply. My companions spared you, brought you here to these lands, as they thought I might wish personal vengeance once reborn. I did not. Why would I destroy that which had such passion? Instead, I watched you, curious to see what you did. I saw you help the singers who were pulling the sledges. Moash took a deep breath. Can you tell me, then, why you treat your own so poorly? Poorly? They are fed, clothed, and trained. Not all of them. You had those poor parchmen working as slaves like humans, and now you're going to throw them at the city walls. Sacrifice. Do you think an empire is built without sacrifice? I breathe again because of their sacrifices, and this world will be ours because of sacrifice. Those who fall will be sung of, but their blood is ours to demand. If they survive the assault, if they prove themselves, then they will be honored. You fought for them during the trip here. Honestly, I expected to have you to have me killed for that. If you were not killed for striking down one of the fused, then why would you be killed for striking one of our lessers? In both cases, human, you proved your passion and earned your right to succeed. Then you bow to authority when presented, and earned your right to continue to live. Tell me, why do you protect those slaves? Because you need to be unified. My people don't deserve this land. We're broken, ruined, incapable. And are you not angered that we took your shards? They were first given me by a man I betrayed. I don't deserve them. No, not you. It's not your fault. You aren't angry that we conquer you? No. Then what does anger you? What is your passionate fury, Moash, the man with an ancient singer's name? Yes, it was still there, still burning, deep down. Kaladin had been protecting a murderer. Vengeance, he whispered. Yes, I understand. Do you know why we fight? Let me tell you. It cuts away, and half an hour later, Moash is walking the streets by himself. Leshwi had said he could leave if he wanted, but her words stuck in his head. He returns to the lumberyard, grabs a bunch of wooden rods, and tosses them to his crew of parchmen. I can train you with those, Moash said. Sticks, Ken asked. Spears, Moash said. I can teach you to be soldiers. We'll probably die anyway. Storm it, we'll probably never make it to the top of the walls. But it's something. I'll do it, Ken said. Slowly, the others nodded in agreement. That is the end of the chapter. So Moash is kind of paralleling Kaladin's journey from the first book, but for the bad guys. And I like the detail that he has an ancient singer's name. I think that's cool.
Very interesting.
Chapter 55 is titled Alone Together. It has the Bridge 4 symbol. I am the least equipped of all to aid in this endeavor. I am finding that the powers I hold are in such conflict that the most simple of actions can be difficult. That's the epigraph. Relaine sat on the shattered plains alone and listened to the rhythms. He had begun to suspect that humans were beginning to hear the rhythms again, for the first time. He attuned the rhythm of the lost as his people were gone, fallen to either the Alethi or the Everstorm. As far as he knew, he was the last of the listeners. He joined a group of Bridge Four who were training with Teft, and annoyed him how they seemed to forget he was there most of the time. They didn't encourage him to draw in Stormlight like they had Scar. He could see that they worried it might turn him into a monster, like the listeners had. That group can barely hold a spear properly, Yake said. You ought to go show them how a real Bridgeman does a kata, eh, Relaine? Kalak help them if they have to fight those shellheads, Eth added. No offense, Relaine. Relaine, Rock said, is okay to throw rocks at Eth. He has hard head too, almost like he has shell. It's all right, Relaine said, because that was what they expected him to say. They talk about why the Voidbringers keep raiding their caravans on the Shattered Plains, wondering if they were testing the capabilities of the Windrunners. They turn to Relaine for answers, which frustrates Relaine. He explains to them again that he had spent his entire life avoiding the Voidbringers, and knew no more about them than the Alethi.
Relaine sipped his drink and wished Renarin were here. The quiet, light-eyed man usually made a point of speaking with Relaine. The others jabbered excitedly, but didn't think to include him. Parshmen were invisible to them. They'd been brought up that way. And yet, he loved them because they did try. He belonged here as much as he did anywhere else. Bridge 4 was his family, now that those from Narak were gone. Eshrenai, Varanus, Thud. Kaladin arrived from his scouting with other members of Bridge 4. "So," Scar said, "are we going to talk about Renarin?" The 28 men shared looks. "What about him?" Kaladin asked. "He's been spending a lot of time with the scribes studying the Tower City," Nottam said. "The other day," Scar added, "he was talking about what he's doing there. Sounds an awful lot like he was learning how to read." The men shifted uncomfortably. "So," Kaladin asked, "what's the problem? Sigil can read his own language. Storms, I can read glyphs." "It's not the same," Scar said. "It's feminine," Drahi added. "Drahi," Kaladin said, "you are literally courting a man." "So?" Drahi asked. "Yeah, what are you saying, Cal?" Scar snapped. "Nothing, I just thought Drahi might empathize." "That's hardly fair," Drahi said. "Yeah," Lopin added. "Drahi likes other guys. That's like he wants to be even less around women than the rest of us. It's the opposite of feminine. He is, you could say, extra manly." "Yeah," Drahi said. Kaladin rubbed his forehead and Relaine empathized. He felt embarrassed for them. They were simply too concerned about what a person should and shouldn't be doing. If Renarin wanted to be a scholar, let him be a scholar. "I'm sorry," Kaladin said. "I wasn't trying to insult Drahi. But storms, men, we know that things are changing. Look at a lot of us. We're halfway to being light eyes. We've already let 5 women into Bridge 4, and they'll be fighting with spears. Expectations are being upended, and we're the cause of it. So let's give Renarin a little leeway, shall we?" Relaine nodded. Kaladin was a good man. For all his faults, he tried even more than the rest of them. Rock gives a rallying speech about their differences, because he's the GOAT.
Let's go, Rock. We love you, Relaine, Rock.
Kaladin said, yeah. I love Rock so much. He's my favorite Bridge 4 member, I think. I don't know, I really like Teft. I love all of them. Relaine, Kaladin said, "Why don't you take the rest of the day off?" "What if I don't want special accommodation because you feel sorry for me?" Relaine thought to himself. Kaladin squatted down beside Relaine. "Hey, you heard what Rock said. I know how you feel. We can help you shoulder this." "Do you really?" Relaine said. "Do you actually know how I feel, Kaladin Stormblessed? Or is that simply a thing that men say?" "I guess it's a thing men say," Kaladin admitted. "Can you tell me how it feels?" Did he really want to know? Relaine considered, then attuned resolve. "I can try." And that is the end of chapter 55.
Oh. Kaladin's trying.
Yeah. He tries.
I feel like he's also probably going to be trying even more now after he spent time with them.
I think, yes. Absolutely.
Which makes sense.
Chapter 56 is titled Always With You, and it has Dalinar's symbol.
That sounds like a bad romance novel title.
Doesn't it? The epigraph reads, "I am also made uncertain by your subterfuge. Why have you not made yourself known to me before this? How is it you can hide? Who are you truly, and how do you know so much about Aedon Alzium?" Dalinar is in the vision that he was shown of the Recreants, along with Navani and Jasnah. Jasnah points out that the armor has been soulcast from clay, not actually forged, and posits that they're about 2,000 years ago, which would be 2,000 years after Ar-Etium. Jasnah posits that this is the False Desolation, a legend that claimed some Voidbringers survived Ar-Etium, and that there had been one last war with them before the Parshmen had been transformed and enslaved. She goes to collect whatever information she could. Navani attempts to figure out where Feverstone Keep is in the world, and Dalinar walks over to where Gox is. The Radiants appeared and abandoned their blades and armor. Dalinar led Gox out to the field of abandoned shards. Gox asks why the Radiants gave up, and Dalinar says that they still don't know. He says that he wanted to give Gox as much information as possible, even if he chose not to join the Coalition, so that if they failed, at least somebody would have the pieces to the puzzle. Gox says that he doesn't matter as much as Dalinar believes, and that he was only put on the throne because everyone had been afraid of Zeth. He tells Dalinar that the miracle hadn't even been performed by him, but by Lyft. He doesn't think that he'll ever be important. Gox tells Dalinar that the Viziers are more scared of Dalinar than they were of Zeth. They worry that the Alethi will wipe out Aesir, and Dalinar tells him that no Alethi need to step into Aesish territories. He asks Gox to come to Yir-Ithiru. "And if this happens again?" Yonagon asked. "We will see that it doesn't somehow." Dalinar narrowed his eyes. "I don't know what caused the Recreants, but I can guess. They lost their vision, Your Excellency. They became embroiled in politics and let divisions creep among them. They forgot their purpose, protecting Roshar for its people. Yonagon looked at him, frowning. That's harsh. You always seemed so respectful of the Radiance before.
I respect those who fought in the Desolations. These, I can sympathize. I too have on occasion let myself be distracted by small-minded pettiness. But respect? No. They killed their Spren. They betrayed their oaths. They may not be villains as history paints them, but in this moment they failed to do what was right and just. They failed Roshar.
The Stormfather rumbled in the distance, agreeing with the sentiment. Doc says that Lyft doesn't trust Dalinar because he acts so righteous. She's sure that he's hiding something. One of the soldiers walks up to Gox and gives him the speech that the Almighty had prepared for this vision. The men begin to fight over the shards, and Gox disappeared from the vision. Dalinar waited for the vision to end. Except, it didn't. He was still on the field. Last time, the vision had ended before this. Stormfather? No reply. Dalinar turned around. A man in white and gold stood there. Dalinar jumped, scrambling backward. The man was old. He seemed to be Shin, judging by his skin and eyes, and he wore a golden crown. Those eyes. They were ancient. The skin surrounding them deeply creased, and they danced with joy as he smiled at Dalinar, and rested a golden scepter on his shoulder. Suddenly overwhelmed, Dalinar fell to his knees.
I know you. You're him. God.
Yes.
Where have you been?
I've always been here. Always with you, Dalinar. Oh, I've watched you for a long, long time.
Here? You're not the Almighty, are you?
Honor? No, he truly is dead, as you've been told. The old man's smile deepened, genuine and kindly. I'm the other one, Dalinar. They call me Odium.
Oh. What's he doing here? Why does he not look evil? Why does he not look evil?
For so long.
One more chapter.
What?
Chapter 57, Passion. The epigraph reads, it's Dalinar symbol again, and the epigraph reads, if you would speak to me further, I request open honesty. Return to my lands, approach my servants, and I will see what I can do for your quest. Odium. Dalinar scrambled to his feet. Odium, standing in front of him. The Stormfather had grown distant. Dalinar could sense a faint emotion from him. A whine? No, a whimper. Odium rested his golden scepter against the palm of his hand. I remember this day. Such passion. And such loss. Terrible for many, but glorious for others. You are wrong about why the Radiance fell, Dalinar. There was infighting among them, true, but no more than in other eras. They were honest men and women with different views at times, but unified in their desire to do what was best. What do you want of me? Odium strolled over to a small boulder and settled down. He nodded to the space next to him. Dalinar made no move to sit. You have been placed in a difficult position, my son. You are the first to bond the Stormfather in his current state. Did you know that? You are deeply connected to the remnants of a god. Whom you killed. Yes, I'll kill the other one too, eventually. She's hidden herself somewhere, and I'm too shackled. You're a monster. Oh, Dalinar, this from you of all people? Tell me you've never found yourself in conflict with someone you respected. Tell me you've never killed a man because you had to, even if, in a better world, he shouldn't deserve it. Yes, he'd done that. Too many times. I know you, Dalinar. Come, sit down. I won't devour you or burn you away at a touch. Dalinar hesitated. You need to hear what he says. Even this creature's lies can tell you more than a world of common truths. He walked over, then stiffly sat down. What do you know of us three? Honestly, I wasn't even aware there were three of you. More, in fact, but only three of relevance to you. Me, Honor, Cultivation. You speak of her, don't you? I suppose. Some people identify her with Roshar, the Spren of the world itself. She'd like that. I wish I could simply let her have this place. So do it. Leave us alone. Go away. Odium turned to him so sharply that Dalinar jumped. Is that an offer to release me from my bonds, coming from the man holding the remnants of Honor's name and power? Dalinar stammered. Idiot, you're not some raw recruit. Pull yourself together. No, he said firmly. Ah, all right then. Odium smiled, a twinkle in his eyes. Oh, don't fret so. These things must be done properly. I will go if you release me, but only if you do it by intent. And what are these consequences of my releasing you? Well, first I'd see to cultivation's death. There would be other consequences, as you call them, as well. And you can't just leave without killing anyone? Well, let me ask you this in return. Why did you seize control of Alethkar from poor Elokar? I don't reply. Don't give him ammunition. You knew it was for the best. You knew that Elokar was weak, and the kingdom would suffer without firm leadership. You took control for the greater good, and it has served Roshar well. A man cannot serve two gods at once, Dalinar. And so, I cannot leave her behind. In fact, I cannot leave behind the splinters of honor, as I once thought I could. I can already see that going wrong. Once you release me, my transformation of this realm will be substantial. You think you'll do better? Do better than others would for this land? You, a manifestation of hatred and pain? They call me Odium. A good enough name. It does have a certain bite to it. But the word is too limiting to describe me, and you should know that it is not all I represent. Which is, he looked to Dalinar. Passion, Dalinar Colin. I am emotion incarnate. I am the soul of the Sprennen of men. I am lust, joy, hatred, anger, and exaltation. I am glory, and I am vice. I am the very thing that makes men men. Honor cared only for bonds, not the meaning of bonds and oaths, merely that they were kept. Cultivation only wants to see transformation, growth. It can be good or bad for all she cares. The pain of men is nothing to her. Only I understand it. Only I care, Dalinar. I don't believe that. I can't believe that. The old man sighed, then heaved himself to his feet. If you could see the result of Honor's influence, you would not be so quick to name me a god of anger. Separate the emotion from men, and you have creatures like Nail and his Skybreakers. That is what Honor would have given you. You said I was wrong about what caused the Radiants to abandon their oaths. What was it really? Odium smiled. Passion, son. Glorious, wondrous passion. Emotion. It is what defines men, though ironically you are poor vessels for it. It fills you up and breaks you, unless you find someone to share the burden. He looked toward the dying men. But can you imagine a world without it? No, not one I'd want to live in. Ask that of cultivation next time you see her. Ask what she'd want for Roshar. I think you'll find me to be the better choice. Next time? I've never seen her. Of course you have, Odium said, turning and walking away. She simply robbed you of that memory. Her touch is not how I could have helped you. I stole a part of you away and left you like a blind man who can't remember that he once had sight. Dalinar stood up. I offer you a challenge of champions, with terms to be discussed. Will you accept it? Odium stopped, then turned slowly. Do you speak for the world, Dalinar Colin? Will you offer this for all Roshar? Either way, I don't accept. Odium stood taller, smiling in an unnervingly understanding way. I need not take on such a risk, for I know, Dalinar Colin, that you will make the right decision. You will free me. No, you should have never revealed yourself, Odium. I once feared you, but it is easier to fear what you don't understand. I've seen you now, and I can fight you. You've seen me, have you? Curious. Odium smiled again. Then everything went white. Dalinar found himself standing on a speck of nothingness that was the entire world, looking up at an eternal, all-embracing flame. It stretched in every direction, starting as red, moving to orange, then changing to blazing white. Then somehow the flame seemed to burn into a deep blackness, violet and angry. This was something so terrible that it consumed light itself. It was hot, a radiance indescribable, intense heat and black fire, colored violet at the outside. Burning, overwhelming power. It was the scream of 1,000 warriors on the battlefield. It was the moment of most sensual touch and ecstasy. It was the sorrow of loss, the joy of victory, and it was hatred. Deep, pulsing hatred with a pressure to turn all things molten. It was the heat of 1,000 suns. It was the bliss of every kiss. It was the lives of all men wrapped up in one, defined by everything they felt. Even taking in the smallest fraction of it terrified Dalinar. It left him tiny and frail. He knew if he drank of that raw, concentrated, liquid black fire, he'd be nothing in a moment. The entire planet of Roshar would puff away, no more consequential than the curling smoke of a snuffed-out candle. It faded, and Dalinar found himself lying on the rock, staring upward. Odium knelt down beside him, then helped him rise to a seated position. "There, there, that was a smidge too much, wasn't it? I had forgotten how overwhelming that could be. Here, have a drink." He handed Dalinar a water skin. Dalinar looked at it, baffled, then up at the old man. In Odium's eyes, he could see that violet-black fire, deep, deep within. The figure with whom Dalinar spoke was not the god. It was merely a face, a mask. Because if Dalinar had to confront the true force behind those smiling eyes, he would go mad. Odium patted him on the shoulder. "Take a minute, Dalinar. I'll leave you here. Relax. It..." He cut off, then frowned, spinning. He searched the rocks. "What?" "Nothing. Just an old man's mind playing tricks on him." He patted Dalinar on the arm. "We'll speak again. I promise." He vanished in an eye blink. Dalinar collapsed backward, completely drained. "That guy is creepy." Dalinar shifted, sitting up with difficulty.
"Lift?"
A head popped up from behind some nearby rocks. "I mean, old men are all creepy," Lift said. "Seriously, all wrinkly and, hey, want some sweets? And, oh, listen to this boring story. I'm onto them. They can act nice all they want, but nobody gets old without ruining a whole bunch of lives." She climbed over the rocks. "Even as old people go, that one was extra creepy." "What was that thing, tight butt? Didn't smell like a real person." "They call it odium, and it is what we fight." "Huh. Compared to that, you're nothing." "Thank you." She nodded as if it were a compliment. "I'll talk to Gox. You got good food at that tower city of yours? We can prepare some for you." "Yeah, I don't care what you prepare. What do you eat? Is it good?"
"Yes."
"Not military rations or some such nonsense, right?"
"Not usually."
"Great." She looked at the place where Odium had vanished, then shivered visibly. "We'll visit." She paused, then poked him in the arm. "Don't tell Gox about that Odium thing, okay? He's got too many old people to worry about already." Dalinar nodded. The bizarre girl vanished, and moments later, the vision ended. The end of part two.
Hi, Odium.
That's weird.
Huh. So they've been lied to about who he is. Dalinar was told, yeah, he cannot deny a contest of champions. He is too prideful. He legit was just like, no.
Yeah. He said, "You're going to set me free. I don't even have to do a contest of champions because I know that you're going to do this." Which, you should remember that the shards have some sort of future sight. They have some sort of way to see the future.
Uh-huh.
So what has Odium seen that makes him so sure that Dalinar is going to release him?
Him being free?
Yes.
It might not be... Well, I guess it would have to be Dalinar, because he's the only one who's bonded to the Stormfather. But...
yeah. And Odium, you know, talking about the Stormfather is different now than he was in the past with, after Honor's death. I hope you're excited to see more of Odium. The main antagonist has finally introduced himself. This is like... this is like Kingdom Hearts 2 ending, and you get the cutscene where Xehanort appears for the first time.
Kingdom Hearts 2? What do you mean?
What's the name of the secret ending? The secret ending, yeah, in the credits.
I don't remember that scene.
It's literally the ending of Birth by Sleep, but, like, in cutscene form. And I don't know that this is the case, but I was trying to do his voice when Moash was hearing voices in his head in that chapter, because I'm pretty sure that's Odium. Like, what he's saying is a very Odium thing to say. Like, it's not your fault. Don't worry about it. You did what you had to do. It's okay.
Yeah, I was wondering what voice that was. I was like, is that a Sprint?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I believe that Odium is talking to him then. But,
I mean, that's the same voice you do for Pattern.
Is it the same voice?
Yeah.
Well, they're not the same. It's not Pattern, I promise. Be a hell of a twist, though, huh?
Uh-huh.
My name is Pattern.
It's like, end of the, like, least interesting part of the book. It's like, oh hey, here's the main baddie who's just here now.
He's just here.
He could have done this the whole time, but he didn't. He's here
he's
now.
He's just been watching. He's just been watching. He's been with Dalinar for so long.
And he could make you go insane if he wanted to.
Yeah, just if he showed you a fraction of his true self instead of what he presents to them. Odium's a great character.
Who
Odium
did he take over
so
for?
So much fun. What do you mean?
Like, when people become shards, do they become new shards? Or do they take over the role of a previous shard?
Race took up Odium, is what I will say. Race took up the shard of Odium.
But some people think that Dalinar would become a shard which is like a new shard? One that doesn't exist?
He would be a combination of the shards.
I don't like that. That's dumb.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Don't elevate Dalinar to special boy. Ooh, I'm all of them.
Yeah.
Because I'm special. No, don't do that.
If they were going to do that with any character, I would want it to be an unassuming side character. I don't want it to be the lead. You know, like, that's a little too... and like, people have been like, maybe Kaladin will do it. And I'm like, that still feels like even another step of like, I'm the cool protagonist.
I'm the chosen one. You know?
Yeah, I'm like, no, it can be... If they're going to go that route, which I don't know that Sanderson is, it can be somebody else. But, I don't know that Sanderson is going that route, but...
Do all of the previous shards have to die before new ones can be created? Or can just one take up the mantle of another? Or, like, right after?
So... Where do I put this? I want to read you a line from The Way of Kings again. So let me pull it up really quickly. It's a line from Hoid when he reveals that his name is Hoid. So Hoid says... Hoid is saying some fucking wild random shit. And Dalinar goes, "Wit, I haven't the mind for this tonight. I'm sorry if I'm missing your intent, but I have no idea what you mean." And then Wit just goes, "I know. Adenalsium." And Dalinar's like, "What?" And Wit goes, "Have you ever heard the term, Dalinar?" "Ado, what?" "Nothing. Nonsense. Balderdash. Figgly drack. Isn't it odd that gibberish words are often the sounds of other words, cut up and dismembered, then stitched into something like them, yet wholly unlike them at the same time? I wonder if you could do that to a man. Pull him apart, emotion by emotion, bit by bit, bloody chunk by bloody chunk, then combine them back together into something else, like a dizzy and Amian. If you do put a man together like that, Dalinar, be sure to name him gibberish for me. Or perhaps Gibbletish." So, we heard this name thrown around a lot, Adenalsium. Whoever is writing this latest letter asked Hoid how they know so much about Adenalsium. I'm trying to think if Adenalsium has been used in the books outside of this. And then Wit describes, like, right after he talks about Adenalsium, like, it sounds like what he's saying is unrelated, but it's Wit, so obviously you need to look a little bit closer at what he's saying. But he talks about, what if you could rip a person apart into little pieces? Emotion, it separated them into emotion by emotion.
So the shards are basically like pieces of the one that are being torn from them and then reunited and then other pieces torn away.
And Dalinar says earlier in this book, he's asking about Odium, and the Stormfather says that Odium is far greater than I, but the power of ancient Adenalsium permeates him and controls him.
So Odium carries the piece of Adenalsium that it represents passion. Is Adenalsium the name for the one?
The one from that random religion?
The concept of the one that exists in multiple religions on Roshar.
Oh, okay. Well, there's all possibly they could have taken that from Adenalsium, but Adenalsium is whatever existed before the shards, and the shards come from Adenalsium.
could everyone come from Ada Nauseam, but they just carry the largest part?
Well, it's less so
I can feel you trying to tiptoe and not answer my question in a spoilery way.
So, let's say it this way, right? Grace holds the piece of Ada Nauseam that would be the emotion of passion, like you said.
Yes, yes.
Odium. Or at least that's what he would say. Like, everybody kind of says something different, you know? So he says that he's passion. Can we trust him? Maybe. But he also could be trying to just butter up Dalinar a little bit, you know?
Yeah, but also when he showed a tiny fraction of his true form, that is definitely the impression that Dalinar got.
Yeah, he got really strong emotion from it.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, Odium, what I don't want to get into is where the shards come from. I'm okay telling you that the shards are pieces of Ada Nauseam. I don't want to get into what happened to create them yet.
Well,
but
I know that these aren't the original shards. They are...
So, they're not the original shards in the sense that the shards come from Ada Nauseam. Like, nobody held Odium before Race, but Odium exists as a piece of a greater whole that predates when Race held Odium. You know what I'm saying?
Like, oh, so you don't mean that there were other people that were the shards before the current set of the shards?
Yeah, I was trying to be... I didn't want to correct you, and I was trying to be vague about it. But I'm fine now that we've met Odium and we've talked a little bit more. The shards predate the holders of the vessels, as they're referred to, in the sense that they existed as part of Ada Nauseam at one point. And then something happened, and Ada Nauseam is no longer around, and instead there are pieces of him that are held by these 16 individuals. What happened is not what I'm not going to get into what happened.
So when each of the gods dies, like the holders of the shards, when the holders die, then those pieces probably come back together and then could be broken apart in a different way.
So, okay, actually, so Sanderson has said that Ada Nauseam did not have to split into the specific set of shards that he did. There could have been a different, like, combination of shards.
So, yes, I am correct.
Yeah.
The pieces but could break off differently. Hence... if the gods die and new people become the holders of the shards, they would be very different shards than the previous ones.
If they took up multiple. If they took up the same one, they would be influenced by that same intent of the shard.
I mean, if multiple gods die, and so all their pieces come back together, and then
so they wouldn't come back together... automatically. You would have to gather them back together.
Oh.
No. So, right now, one of the things that is going on in the Cosmere is the planet Cell is really fucked up because when Odium killed the shards there, he pulled their power from the spiritual realm into the cognitive realm and just kind of left it there. And the power is... dangerous left on its own without a vessel to direct it. So Cell is one of the most dangerous planets to try to get to because the cognitive realm around it is just filled with wild investiture that that could be very bad. Odium's intent in that was he wanted to stop the... because we know that like when enough investiture gets together, it forms a sort of conscience or like self-awareness, as we've seen with the Spren, right? Their investiture. So what Odium was scared of happening was that he killed
the shards, he killed the vessels, and he broke up their powers, and he was afraid that if he left it in the spiritual realm where the shards reside, then the power would take on a mind of its own, and it would just be another threat.
Did he not?
Unfortunately,
know? He didn't know about how spread work, which means that it still does that anyway.
Unfortunately, in the cognitive realm, it still happened anyways.
Yep.
The magic in Cell is called the Aeon Door, I believe, and it is a combination of the investiture of devotion and dominion. And interestingly enough, I'm on a total ramble right now, but it's okay. Interestingly enough, the magic system of Cell is location-based, so you can only practice magic when you are in the location that the magic is linked to, and that is because the cognitive realm does layer over top of the physical realm. Like space exists in the cognitive realm, whereas the spiritual realm, space isn't like a thing. The spiritual realm exists at all time in all space. So because the investiture of Cell is in the cognitive realm, you can't tap it unless you're in the place in the physical realm that corresponds with where that investiture is in the cognitive realm.
On
Does that make
cell.
Sense? Yeah, which means you have to be on Cell on the specific part of the continent where the power is. Like, it gets down to, there's multiple magic systems on Cell based on what continent you're on, because of how the power split up.
I was thinking that maybe there was part of it that got down to, like, the city or, like, the specific area, and that they would build temples in specific areas that you would have to go to wield the magic, because that was the only place you could do it.
The magic of Elantris is really cool. It's just, I don't like the story at all. This is all stuff that Sanderson's going to talk about, because he says there's going to be two more Elantris books. But yeah, so, like, that's why Wit can, like, do Allomancy and do Awakening and Heightenings and all that wherever. He can use his breaths wherever, right? Because their investiture exists in the spiritual realm.
But so, not the other two.
Yes, so if... Which, I'll tell you, Hoyt really wants the power from Cell. he really wants the power from Cell. But if he were to get it, he would only be able to use it on Cell.
For now,
unless he found a way to cheat.
Unless he found a way to drag a piece of it through the cognitive realm with him wherever he went.
Yes. Yeah, there's a ton about Cell. It's very important. Cell was, like, Cell was really important in the last couple books that just came out, to the point where I was like, God damn it, I gotta look up Elantris stuff again. but yeah.
Okay.
But yes, Mango, thanks for... we've been going for a long time. We'll end it here, but thank you for joining me for the arrival of Odium to the story. I hope that you're interested in what is going to happen next. Obviously, we'll have the interludes. I will tell you the interlude POVs are Kaza, which is a random character, but she's got a pretty cool interlude. Kaza, Taravangian, and Venli.
My reaction to one versus the next.
Yeah.
I don't even like Venli, but...
Yeah.
Damn.
But she's not Taravangian.
Yep. She's not draining the blood out of people.
Guys, thank you guys so much for joining us. We have a Discord server. The link to join that is in the episode description. You guys can tweet us at SpeakStormlight. Email us at speakthewordsasp@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter at Sean_AFK. Follow Alx, who made our cover art, our juice cover art, at Alx_BigBoy. All the links are in the episode description. Mango, it is your turn to say the words.
Life before death, strength before weakness, and journey before destination.